Yeah, and what's the other thing that's important? There is a article.
Okay, it's the liver, that thing.
It's not, because obviously diabetic patients are more likely to get acalcaneous cholecystitis or a recurrent or more severe forms. Maybe the GP should do the operation. Hey, hello again, another episode of Scrubbing In.
I need my allergy.
She's was back, we got him back, despite lack of demand, and welcome back, and we're going to talk about
Cholecystitis,
again, very common.
For the general surgeon.
For the general surgeon. Irrespective of what specialty you're going to be, you've got a good chance of this coming up in the exam, but obviously on call as well. So, Mo, tell us, cholecystitis, two main flavors, what are they?
Acute and chronic cholecystitis.
Yeah, that's that. But within
calcular and acalcular.
Yeah, exactly. Calculus or acalculus cholecystitis. Okay. Let's talk about the acute setting, because that's the scenario you're most likely to get if you're a generalist rather than a HPV or PGI. And you'll get a scenario where you're on call and some ED or one of your medical colleagues call you, and there's a patient who's got right upper quadrant pain, who's got nausea, maybe vomiting, temperature, and guarding, whatever the combination is. The calculus and acalculus cholecystitis, which was more common. Calculus, gallstones, very common, so it's more likely to be gallstones, but we'll go through each one. So you've got the scenario, you've got a 63-year-old lady who has attended ED, and your registrar has called you saying the patient has got a lot of pain in the right quadrant, then they've got nausea, we don't have any previous imaging, this is the first episode, that she's got diabetes, hypertension, and she's had a total abdominal hysterectomy, she's on anti-diabetic drugs, non-smoker, BMI 40, and she has got a tachycardia, she's got a temperature of 38, she's vomiting, she looks dehydrated, she's in the emergency department. How would you manage this patient?
All right. Hello, Ellen. I'm going to head to the emergency department to assess the patient.
Yep.
I know the topic is cholecystitis, but for the sake of the exam, you're thinking serious conditions. So on the way over, you want to assess the patient and exclude as much as you can in terms of serious things. Serious thing is a foregut perforation, so gastric or duodenal perf.
Yep.
So we're going to go assess the patient, examine them from ATE as per the CRIS protocol. You want to ensure your colleagues have done the essential first aid, making sure they've got fluids and antibiotics on board, that bloods have been withdrawn. You've got to examine the patient and take a history. And first, as you say, establish the past medical history. She's diabetic, whether or not she's up to date with her blood glucose control, tablets, insulin, whatever. Type 1 is probably insulin. Any previous abdominal surgery, how long her history has gone? Is it slowly evolving or is it suddenly evolving?
Very good. Okay. So like you said, the first thing you want to say to the examiner is this patient is clearly very unwell. I'm very concerned about this patient. I'd go see the patient myself, having got the call from my SD3 for whatever the scenario is. The things that would be keeping in mind is that there's a wide differential here, and I want to rule out serious pathology. Having taken a focused history, with the salient points being around the duration of the current illness and the symptoms, the severity, when it started, the background to it, the past medical history, some of which you've already given me, and then the social history and whatever.
Other confounding pathology, so
exactly.
A history of NSAIDs, any previous urinary tract symptoms, things like that, because these can all be confusing.
Very good. So they'll give you a bit of feedback, like we just said, and they'll give you a scenario, they'll give you a bit more extra information.
Not you in the right direction.
Yeah, and then you're going to say, I'm going to examine the patient, and they're going to tell you, oh, they're very tender, and right, there's Murphy's positive. They'll give you something that's usually relatively obvious, and you've given the examination. By the end of it, you say, okay, so my suspicion is more towards this. However, I still want to rule out the other things you talked about, such as an upper GI perforated
visit. GI perforation or pyelonephritis, that kind of mimic the same.
Yeah, pancreatitis, pyelonephritis, gastroesophageal reflux disease, or unlikely to get a temperature with that. It could be a gastric valve. There's a whole bunch of stuff, right? But you got to stick with common things going being common. So what's your kind of... You talked about the CRISP, you talked about sepsis 6. Of course, you're not just going to wait for your definitive scans. If somebody's tachycardic and unwell, you're going to give them antibiotics.
You're going to have a CT scan.
Yeah. So you're going to talk about investigations. Let's start from the basic stuff. You're going to get a set of blood tests, which includes a
full blood count, using knees, also get CRP. I'm going to look at the clotting.
Yeah.
I'm also going to look at the renal function, at white cell count.
Yeah,
group and save just in case.
Yeah. And what's the other thing that's important? That is a marker, the organ that connects, that is near the gallbladder.
Oh, amylase or lipase.
Liver function tests.
Okay.
The liver, that thing.
The small organ that's kind of important. So you want to see LFTs quite earlier on, okay? So yeah, liver function tests, well done.
Coffee's not peeing. That
thing is rubbish. So yeah, so we need to get full blood count, using these LFTs,
yeah, and
CRP, amylase.
Absolutely, but this is what you want to say. So I would then, to confirm or rule out my diagnosis, I want to get a set of blood tests, including full blood count, CRP, using these LFTs, clotting, and amylase or lipase, depending on what you work. Fine. And again, they will give you some feedback, or they'll wait till you ask for other investigation. What other investigations you want? You said you want to rule out other things.
So I'd like to get a CT scan here.
You can get a CT scan. Some people do erect chest X-ray. That's more outdated now, so you can. But if they really push you, don't fight it. Just get the erect chest X-ray. We know that a bunch of them, you can have a perforation and still miss it on an X-ray. Fine. But if they're nudging you towards that, don't fight back. Fine. Erect chest X-ray, maybe, maybe not. You're going to get urine dip because you may have a urine infection, UTI. You're going to get this summer.
GP, what's the sensitivity to urine dip over 65?
Yeah. I recommend doing a urine dip over the age of 65 because of the high rate of asymptomatic bacteria.
You would say that in an exam, you get urine dip. Okay.
Forget urine dip.
You would get urine dip. And you would, yes, you'd get to a CT scan, but don't forget the more kind of basic stuff because they're marks as well, because it's very easy to go straight to the scanners. I know.
I think that would, those that you're in small hospitals, difficult to get them overnight.
They'll come back with something like that. So just say erect chest X-ray. And if they say, oh, how good is the chest X-ray? If they flip it on, you say, how good is the chest X-ray? Your lower perforate. Then you can say, well, I appreciate it's not, but you can say my trust, and a lot of trust still is the protocol to get a chest X-ray. So it's not wrong. And then you would also want to get an ECG.
I was going to say ECG as well as an ABG.
Yeah, exactly.
Would work in this situation.
The ABG you would have probably got during your sepsis 6 as well. But yes, you're absolutely right to say it. Yeah. So you go to investigations, and that's when the feedback comes. They'll either put CT scan in front of you or some kind of result in front of you. So they'll give you the feedback saying white cells are 17, CRP is 100, and hemoglobin is normal. LFTs may or may not be deranged, but we'll talk about that a little bit later on. And you do a CT scan. CT scan, there's no free-handed the diaphragm on the X-ray. The CT scan shows a thick-walled gallbladder. How thick does it have to be, technically, for us to call it cholecystitis?
Is it more than 5 millimeters?
Yeah, four and above. For about four or five millimeters, yeah. Nobody sits there measuring gallbladders on a CT scan, I'm sure, but it has to be 4 or 5. Does it always show stones?
Not necessarily. No. Only 10% of them are radiopaque.
Yeah, there's different kind of percentages depending on what paper you read. You're right, but all of them, all you need to remember is that not all of them. So you can have really bad, lots of gallstones, and a CT scan doesn't show it. Okay. But they would usually, again, give you something that's a bit more clear-cut, especially in a general surgical canal. They give you a thick-walled kind of gallbladder with fluid around it. And with these inflammatory markers, what's your next step?
Next step is to make sure that she's on antibiotics, make sure she's got a catheter. I confirmed a bile duct width on the ultrasound the next day. Sometimes there may be a missed CBD stone on the CT scan.
Okay, excellent. But the key important thing, especially this scenario, and that's why we kind of threw the diabetic bit in there, is because obviously diabetic patients are more likely to get acalcaneous cholecystitis or recurrent flare or more severe forms or head towards more gangrenous core. They're unlikely to give you a gangrenous core in a general surgical step. But what they want you to differentiate is the patient may or may not have gallstones and you're still none the wiser on a CT scan. So once you've admitted them, fluids and everything else you've talked about, you're going to want to get an ultrasound scan to see if they've got stones or not, because the afterwards, a higher level thinking, planning is going to be different. Okay, so you've got your ultrasound scan. The patient's now on a ward, had antibiotics. Trends are slightly settling down. You get your ultrasound scan and it shows it's got gallstones. What would the then ultimate treatment be?
Ultimate treatment here is laparoscopic cholecystectomy.
Presuming the ducts are clear and that liver functions are settling down yet.
And the confidence of the patient and the surgeon performing the operation. Some people...
Or the confidence of the patient in the surgeon. if they know where the liver is, they should be liver function test should be done or not. Maybe the GP should do the operation. Who knows? So you're absolutely right. It's when the patient... You've established a diagnosis, gallstone cholecystitis, calculus cholecystitis. then a discussion, and again, this may be beyond the general surgical station, the hot coli, yes or no, versus somebody's just had something terrible happen to them outside. Is everything all right? Okay. Yeah, then the conversation may be about should you do a hot coli or not, but again, in a general surgical station, that's unlikely to go down that route. Let's presume the patient's getting better. You're at a unit where you can't do a hot gallbladder for whatever reason. And then if you're a colorectal or breast trainee or a non-upper GI or HPB, what would you do with the patient?
So I'd refer them to my upper GI colleague with the proviso or asking for them to perform an early cholecystectomy, urgent cholecystectomy within the next 2 weeks, ideally, as per the current NICE guidelines.
Absolutely. Now, that may sound very controversial, and I think it is, because I think there's lots of some of the best lab colis I've seen been done by colorectal and breast surgeons, to be honest, traditionally, because they were, you know, they're truly general surgeons.
Shout out to the vascular and the Fortin.
Absolutely, the vascular, they're brilliant in that. So, of course, it doesn't mean that just because you're not upper GI, actually, you can't do a lab coli. Of course, they can, as long as you've had a training. All I would say is if you've got colorectal or breast written on your badge, and they say, would you do it yourself? And they will see your badge, it's got that specialty on it. Just be careful as to what you take on. Now, if you say, like, yeah, actually, my training, I know it's not my subspecialty, but my training is allowed. And in my hospital, colorectal surgeons still, or breast surgeons still do lab colis, and I've got the training in it, that's fine. But if you're not, don't be pushed into doing something that you're not comfortable with. And vice versa for upper GI doing things that, you know, that our bosses maybe did. But just remember where you're in an exam setting. So, okay, yeah, you'd refer them. Or you do it yourself, depending on fine. What if it's acalculus cholecystitis?
So management here is medical, so treat them with antibiotics,
yep.
Monitor them. As this patient is diabetic, she might flare up, so I need to be sure that she's in a place where we can either still perform a laparoscopic cholecystectomy if she's not settling down,
yep.
If there's the expertise and the specialty to handle that in the acute setting.
Yep.
The other option is interventional radiology and drain the gallbladder.
Yeah, so the mainstay treatment really of acalculus, so non-stone cholecystitis, is not surgery most of the time, because most of them will settle. However, there are instances where they may push you, say, oh, yeah, you're giving lots of antibiotics. Oh, yeah, yeah, well, tazza, meropenem, everything else. Yeah, you put some bleach down the line, it's still not working. You know, what's the next step? If they really push you towards that.
This guideline written by Donald Trump.
This, yeah, also. Yeah, probably yes. It is. Yeah, probably yes.
Trump guy.
So, if they're really pushing you towards, because that still falls in the remit of general surgery, so you'd be aware of that. Sepsis control, right? And whether it's gallstones or acalculus cholecystitis, just remember, because they may give you a scenario where it's a very frail elderly patient who really isn't fit to be able to tolerate general anaesthetic, and you have to think after discussing with upper GI colleagues if you're not upper GI yourself or HPB, then you may do a cholecystostomy and then come back another day to rethink things, or that might be the ceiling of care. So just be prepared that a cholecystostomy still is an option. In reality, we try and avoid doing that because there's usually somebody around or somebody that can do it.
It's a very sluffy area, gallbladder.
It is. It's something that most upper GI or HPB surgeons, routinely advocate, just because, unlike the exam where everybody's on a yacht which has been, you know, raided by pirates and everybody's a hostage, or they're a golfing tournament somewhere.
The whole HPB
department. Yeah, exactly. The whole continent is gone somewhere. Nobody's there to call, you know, in which case they force you to do the down that line. In reality, there usually is somebody. Okay, so that's the treatment of calculus and acalculus cholecystitis. They may also ask you about some of the potential complications of either or. What could happen in the acute setting?
So
something you kind of touched on already.
Untreated calculus cholecystitis might actually develop an adjacent liver aptus, perforate into the peritoneal cavity.
Yeah.
You can also develop liver abscess or perihepatic abscesses and collections of the
night
under the diaphragm.
Yeah.
Left untreated for a long time, you can have a fistula between the gallbladder and any hollow viscus next to it.
Yep.
Colodidinal, colocolic. If there's a large stone in the Hartman's pouch, can varying degrees of Barrett's syndrome eventually lead to a type 4.
Case in general, they're not going to have time. They're going to give you
coronary in one.
Yeah, they're going to give you one
domain.
Exactly, they're going to give you one of them, but you've got to be able to deal with all of that. Okay, let's say that there is an obstructing CBD stone, and again, we're going to keep it this general because this does happen on a general take. It's an obstructing stone, got cholecystitis, and they've got jaundice, amylase, lipase, is or isn't normal, and you get an ultrasound scan, there's a wide CBD. What do you do next?
Next is make sure the patient is on antibiotics, discuss with the microbiology department, usually some form of meropenem or...
Yeah. So again, treat the sepsis, aspirin sepsis 6, and you're going to get imaging.
New imaging, you get MRCP.
MRCP usually, and again, they'll tell you there's something very obvious, like a big filling defect in the CBD, and then you're going to do what?
ERCP.
An ERCP.
Maybe not a stent, maybe a hysterectomy.
Stent not always. Again, that's going to be beyond general surgery, because there's a lot of disagreement, even amongst upper GI and HPB, as to when you would have won. But certainly an ERCP, stone extraction, and ideally, if possible, and a sphincterotomy, stone removal, etc. And then
cholecystectomy when they're fit. And I ask you, how would you define Murphy's site?
It's very difficult to define because I think everybody has a different idea of it. Yeah. It's rebound tenderness. Classically, it's been described as what when you kind of press
in. Tenderness on deep inspiration while you're forming deep patients.
Exactly. Meant to be that as you inspire, expand the lungs, liver and gallbladder come down and touches the tip of your finger. Yeah. And now I give you a scenario, somebody's got BMI of 40, I mean, the chances of your fingertips hitting their gallbladder and somebody's BMI of 40 is probably not terribly high. But that in itself, though, is not going to be the clincher in a scenario. They're going to give you enough other stuff.
They can give you the anatomy, ask it to describe the anatomy of Kallis triangle.
So, Murphy, there was a test of barriers that you have to then also found it in the left upper footprint.
This should be good. Go on, then. Cytus and versus?
Then it's not a true Murphy's.
How many gallbladders have you taken with people in left upper quadrant pain?
Yeah, but...
It's more than it. It's still jump out of the left upper quadrant.
Yeah, but it's still not going to matter because your sequence of events that you're going to do is exactly the same. You're still going to get blood, you're still going to get your blood test, you're going to get your investigations and everything else. So it doesn't really matter. I appreciate what you're saying. You're right. I mean, but unfortunately, there are people that both things being common and more in a clinic setting, you will get patients who've got, well, not so much that, but you're going to get patients, having patients that are going to have gastroesophageal reflux disease and biliary colic, loads of people, because they're both very common, right? And there's a lot of overlap. And how people interpret their symptoms or how we hear those symptoms being reported to us, two clinicians, maybe actually a bit different. So there could be two clinicians, and one will say, oh, that sounds more like this, or that one sounds more like that. It's difficult to tell. So just remember, yes, the history part is important, clinical examination is important, but go through your algorithm still. And remember, in the exam, I mean, I don't think there was any kind of scenario where the kind of diagnosis we never really got there. They usually give you
the toenail melanoma.
The toenail melanoma. I will never forgive him for this because they could read.
Toenail melanoma.
Yeah. It's a lump in the groin. Lymph node again. It's got PR bleeding as well. Oh, okay. So, in rectal cancer, no problem. Went straight down that. 5 minutes, it's getting to the end of this 5 minutes. I've started to sweat it out. And they're like, what else could it be? Like, well, infection, other things. And you got down, what could be a melon? They look like cancer. And look,
the last line in the list.
And they're like, I'm so sorry. I don't know how. So I finally got there. Like, it could be malignancy, or kind of like, well, it could be skin cancer. Okay, melanoma. Yeah. And they're like, oh, thank you. And then I thought, I'm sorry, I don't know how that would cause rectal bleeding. Okay. I was like, oh, no, that was just a red herring. I don't do the scenario. And you're like, so yes.
Equity, you know, you've made it in the exam when they're discussing the structure of the case with you.
Yeah.
I
guess what we were trying to say is some of the stations will be something as simple as differential diagnosis.
Appendectomy. Talk me through your appendectomy.
It could be as simple as that. So don't overthink it and try and listen to what the examiner's saying. But anyway, coming back to the gallbladder, that's really all they're going to need you to want to do and talk about. And beyond that, even if they give you like a critical care setting, so for example, they may give you a setting of somebody who wasn't previously a surgical patient, has got ARDS or has got heart failure, and they've got acalculus cholecystitis, or they've got right quadrant pain and the inflammatory markers kind of
presented under the medics of pneumonia and on a CT scan.
Exactly. There's fluid.
Cholecystitis that's feeding into the pneumonia.
Exactly. That is a very common scenario they'll ask you. And it's the same thing. Okay, if they're sedated, the history is not going to be so easy to you're going to have to take a collateral history, but you'd say the same things again. The only difference is in a critical care setting, you'd obviously want to keep a close, you know, mention that you're going to speak to your intensivist, MDT, of course, and also looking at the trends and their oxygen requirements and all these kind of other buzzwords, urine output, exactly. But that's it for cholecystitis.
That's it.